me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 55 of Metallicast, the Metallica podcast. I'm your host and fellow Metallica fan. My name is Brandon. On this episode, I am joined by guitarist Eric Kluber. Eric currently plays in the band Void Vader, whose upcoming album, Great Fear Rising, will be released April 23rd on Ripple Music. I'm going to play you the first single from that album called I Can't Take It at the end of this episode, so stay tuned for that. In addition to Void Vader, Eric has also played with Gypsy Hawk and White Wizard, among other bands. We talk about playing in a band, touring, being signed to Metal Blade Records, and of course, Metallica, how he got into the band, certain times he's seen them live, the influence they've had on him as a guitarist, and so much more. Here is my conversation with Eric Kluber. My guest today is the guitarist of the band Void Vader. He has also played for Gypsy Hawk and White Wizard. He is a longtime Metallica fan as well. Please welcome to Metallicast, Eric Kluber. Eric, how are you?
Doing great, Brandon.
Wonderful having you. I you're a longtime Metallica fan. We talked a little bit online before you came on this episode. And I know that Metallica has been a big influence on you and Void Vader, and I'm just really curious, what's the first time, do you remember the first time you heard the band and sort of how you became a fan of Metallica?
Yeah, my first memory is hearing For Whom the Bell Tolls on the radio. And I moved around a lot, so I was living in Tustin, California at the time, and KNAC was still around. And I think they were in town for the Monsters of Rock tour with Dokken and Van Halen and the Scorpions, and they were guests.
Yeah,
and that riff right there, it really caught my ear. So that's my first memory. And, I was watching Headbangers Ball and into a lot of metal and picking up Hit Parader magazines and Metal Sludge and Metal Maniacs. So when, I was too young to go to Monsters of Rock, but when Injustice for All came out, I bought it the first day, and I bought it on double vinyl. And at the time, it was funny because that was, should I get it on cassette tape or vinyl? Because I had like an all-in-one, it was a record player and two cassettes. And so then I got it on vinyl. And so that was some of my introduction. I also, around the same time, they put out Cliff Mall. So I remember buying that VHS. So that's how I got into them. And that was, what year was that approximately? 88, I believe. So maybe I heard it in 87 or, no, I'm thinking 88. I think that's really when I became aware of the Mighty Met.
Very nice. And, I mean, that's quite the introduction, I feel like, when you see them on that build. And Injustice for All is not necessarily the, easiest album to digest. If you're, did you have a lot of metal interest going into that album?
I was getting into the metal because Headbangers Ball was going.
Right.
And they had not released a video yet. If you remember, the first video they came out with was One.
Yeah.
But Megadeth was out and Iron Maiden was out.
Sure.
And I believe I'd already even been introduced to like King Diamond because he had the video for Welcome Home, if I'm remembering correctly. Headbangers Ball, it was still Adam Curry. It was before Ricky Rackham.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, man, that's what we did. It was like it was kind of a lucky time to be alive. I was just a kid, like at that point it'd be 12, 13 years old, and so we'd be playing Dungeons and Dragons and listening nice. To heavy metal. I mean, it's like straight out of a fucking comic book.
Well, a lot of metal bands are almost straight out of a comic book,
Say that again.
I said there are a lot of metal bands almost straight out of a comic book. So, you know, all the worlds bleed together, you know.
It was beautiful. It was kind of awesome. It was like a perfect adolescence, really. And getting into playing guitar, that's right when I started playing guitar too. Right when I was 13. Yeah.
Yeah, so what kind of led you to the guitar? Was it your, you know, your interest in these bands, or did you just think, "Oh, that looks cool. I'll give that a shot," or
it was definitely the bands. I mean, it was a fucking awesome time. I mean, so much great music was coming around. I was in middle school, or it was coming out, excuse me. And I mean, you'd go to the grocery store and the shelves would just be filled with like heavy metal magazines. Yeah. You know, it was really kind of the pinnacle, and listening to all the good music. I mean, from like the commercial end of like Rat and to Iron Maiden to the thrash end. And there was a lot of culture that was just all about music. It was very exciting, and really everyone wanted to learn to play an instrument. And my dad did have an acoustic guitar laying around, so that helped.
Mm-hmm.
And but definitely the music. I mean, it's heavy metal made me want to play guitar. If it wasn't for heavy metal and distortion, maybe not so much. Gotta be honest. Yeah. I mean, the sound of the electric guitar was the coolest. Is the coolest to this day.
That's awesome. That's like the, you know, almost like the golden era, and you did the thrash metal scene is rising up, and you know, you're just a few years removed from it sort of exploding and spilling over into, you know, MTV and FM radio and the general mainstream with like the Black Album, and then you have like Countdown to Extinction and other albums like that that sort of crossed over.
Yeah, it was before the huge commercial explosion, so it was still, I was in a great spot too. We moved around a lot. I had to move back to the Detroit area shortly after and continue. And that's where I saw my first concert, which was Injustice for All tour. Was it 89? Summer, like at Pine Knob is what it was called. But it was Metallica and Justice for All tour with the cult opening. That was my first, like,
that's awesome.
Here you go, kid. Yeah, yeah. my rite of passage. But it was also like older. Another thing I wanted to bring up is older brothers. I didn't have an older brother, but my friends did. Mm-hmm. And, I had a younger brother and a younger sister, right? So, but they were very influential as well, and they were super all about Scorpions, and they were already into it from like 82 and 83. So when we came up, we had a good good guidance.
Yeah, yeah.
And that plays into it, man.
Yeah, I have two older brothers. I'm the baby of the family, so I know, you know, my older brother the oldest brother listens to everything from, you know, Aerosmith and Guns N' Roses and then classic rock and Bob Dylan. And so I kind of got that from him. And then the middle brother was into, you know, the grunge scene. And then he got into heavier bands, and some of the heavy bands he got into, I kind of stayed away from. Like, he got into more of the new metal stuff, but I discovered Megadeth through him, and then, and Metallica I kind of stumbled upon on my own, but my love of Metallica was like, oh, wait a minute, Dave Mustaine was in that band, let me borrow your Megadeth record, and then it just spirals, you know?
You did some independent research, some detective work.
Yeah.
Well, it's cool when you kind of find, you latch on to something that you like, and then you keep exploring those branches, and it opens these new worlds. That's a fun way to learn about things. Yeah, dude, Metallica was great, but that's how I definitely got into, you know, got the itch, if you will.
And eventually, it sort of begins as a hobby and then becomes a passion, and then you get into doing, you know, playing in bands. So you got addicted? You just kept on going from there?
One step at a time, man. And everybody wants to, the first step is to pick up the guitar. And it was a classic story of like, well, if you do well on this, I'm doing a horrible impression of my parents. It sounds nothing like that.
But wait, was that your mom or dad?
both in unison. Right? Now my mom has, okay, anyway, so it's a classic story of here's the acoustic guitar. If you learn how to play this, you know, maybe you'll get an electric guitar down the road. So I learned the Mel Bay book and practiced and did well at it. And as my buddy's older brother was going off to join the army and sold his Ibanez Roadstar and like a Roland combo amp to me with like a distortion pedal and a phaser. So that's I acquired that. That was an awesome birthday present. That was like the next level. Like, okay, you're showing progress and promise in it. And then, I moved after that, but then your next step is to try and get into a band. And so you just jam Hollywood, or not Hollywood. I live in Detroit. The hell am I saying? But basement jam parties with your friends and everyone's learning their instruments. And it's usually you and one other musician.
Yeah.
I was fortunate in Michigan, they have basements. So everyone has a basement. And so you go to the drummer's house and you got your little combo amp that you can barely lift.
Yeah.
And you turn up as loud as you can and try to make music, you know, kind of something that resembles music. And then you get your first band and you do the battle of the bands at high school. That's that's like another rite of passage. And then it's just trying to do something legit and I guess professional professional quality, and you just keep following that. And that's how it starts anyway. And it's, and a lot of people kind of start and then it's not for them and they fade out. You know, I ended up moving to Hollywood 10 years at this point, and I've already gone through band after band after band. I'm kind of jumping at the end, but that's how you just stay on. You're just trying to get to something that clicks. I mean, it's you gotta fight for your right to party and rock and roll for sure.
Yeah, I was just having flashbacks when you're talking. When I was in high school, you know, I was like, I had taken piano lessons as a kid, and then, you know, I wanted.
That's a great first step, you know, piano.
Fantastic,
because you learn rhythm, you learn eighth notes, and your 16th, and your triplets, and just playing all music.
Absolutely.
It really comes, it pulls out of the same pot.
Yeah, absolutely. But when I got to high school, I was like, I liked the piano, I did, but I'm like, I want a guitar. I want to be like Metallica, and you know. So, but I had a good buddy, two of my best friends for life that I met in eighth grade. One had a drum set. I wouldn't call him a drummer yet, but he had a drum set.
Yeah.
One was an aspiring guitarist, and I want to play guitar. And he's like, no, I already play guitar. I want you in my band. We need a bassist.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't want to play bass. I want to, you know, I want it to be like the soloist and like the. He's like, my friend goes, such a dick. He's like, you got fat fingers. Play the bass.
So that is kind of funny. Wow.
So I started playing the bass, but I really latched on, and then studying people like Cliff Burton and Steve Harris and Geezer Butler and learning their parts but next thing I knew I was playing bass.
Playing bass in the band. Bass is an awesome instrument. I played it for a little bit. I kind of changed it up about 5 years ago, and I played bass and sang for a band. And as you're kind of saying, a lot of kids gravitate towards the guitar, and it's really cool. The guys that either whether they choose it or it kind of gets thrown on at them, like your position is, it's an awesome discipline, you know. That's kind of a unique story in itself, you know, a different path, if you will, not quite as followed or tread.
Yeah, well, and I ended up taking lessons, and I had a great teacher kind of, you know, taught me the role of the bass player and sort of, you know, how to play in a band. And so once I kind of got that understanding, I really adopted that role and
became
sort of a thing for a moment. But unlike you, when I graduated high school, I went to, I'm a music teacher now, but so I,
you the, are,
I am, I'm a music teacher. Awesome. Okay. Yeah. But which is like a different kind of performance. Like I always liked performing, but the thought of like, and I liked being on stage, but the thought of like grinding it out and being on the road, and like I knew that was not for me.
It's not for everyone. I actually thrive on that. Like it's it's like super strength to be on the road. But go ahead, sorry.
I know. I was just saying, you know, it's just funny to see how the stories start, but then, you know, go in different directions. Because I knew by the time I got to college, I was like, I love playing in bands, I love playing shows, but like I don't see myself being on the road and grinding it out. So, but I always respected the people who thrive on that, like yourself, because I there's a part of me who wants to be that person, but I don't think I have it in me.
Yeah, probably not. And that's great that you're like honest to yourself and then a lot more effective with your time and your energy, because otherwise you'd just be spinning your wheels.
For sure.
You know, because as you said, doing this, I guess, a lot of people that I played with, it wasn't for them. And they did have a great gig, and being in the band was a nuisance, and it took away from their education, from their relationship, from their job, from their family.
Right.
In which I understand. And so that's half of it, is just where you're at in life and what your setup is. You know, I'm not married. Sure. I don't have children. That's huge, you know, in and of itself. And my jobs actually are all day jobs that get me through day to day. Mm-hmm. But it's so I can be in a goddamn band, you know, and like go to this weekend. So we do these shows, and you get to a level where you play in your hometown. You're a hometown hero. You're a local band, and that's awesome. And that's enough for a lot of people. But I wanted to take it to the next level, you know, and just playing Friday or Saturday night at the local club to me wasn't. There was a lot more, and sure. To play and pack up and go play a show in Cleveland in front of 14 people doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but to some people,
yeah.
But to me, that's like it makes all the sense. That's what you have to do.
Yeah, right.
And that's how it is. And so, if you look at it the wrong way, on paper maybe it doesn't make any sense, but to me. Well, no, just the way it is, it makes all the sense in the world. You need to move out. You need to expand. You need to grow beyond your boundaries. And it can be uncomfortable, I guess. To me, it's just nothing but adventure. Right. That's why I look at it. That's how, to us, it's very freeing, you know, to get out of the house, to get out of our town, to forget about our day-to-day and the bills. Yeah. And whatever your domestic thing, whatever your routine is, mm-hmm. It's fantastic to get away from that. At day in and day out, where the actual what's going through your mind is, how do we get to the next town? What time do we have to leave? What time is load in? What's our set time? You know, do I have to change the strings on my guitar? These are the things that you had when you get the chance to tour that you're concerned with, which is just the show and getting to the next town and doing it all over again. Sure. And keeping this machine rolling.
Right.
Okay, I think it's awesome, but. Yeah. If that's nothing but work for you, you're not going to have a good time at all. If you're just hating every minute of it, think of a worse scenario. So that's where like these stages in life kind of everyone finds their path and what's right for them and what's not. Like you said, you love teaching. That's kind of like an avenue of performance. I see that as well. That's one of my day jobs as well. Teaching, doing it for like, God, how many years at this point? 25 years, long time. And still, it probably will forever.
Yeah,
you know, that's one of my cards, and it is, like you said, it is performance, and you can get a lot of satisfaction out of it, like really kind of changing someone's life one-on-one, to be quite honest, you know. Yeah. And that's great, and some dudes have all the talent in the world, as much talent as anybody on stage, but you know, they're gonna teach and they're gonna go home and they have a family and mm-hmm. and that's what they're doing, and that's you know, people that's highly respected. You know, I respect that 1,000%, you know, that's one of the avenues you can be at. You can be in a local band, and that can be like, dude, it's great. Me and the guys get together. You can be in a cover band. That's great. Mm-hmm. Or you can be in the original touring band. And that's what I always wanted to be.
Right.
And I've kind of like shaped my life to be able to do it and still do it. And I think it's actually awesome, man. You know, I've been in Void Vader. You know, I've been in many, many bands. You were talking about some of the previous bands, like White Wizard. That was on Earache Records. We put out a really well-received record called Over the Top. Put out some videos. I got to do my first national tour with them, which I had always wanted to do, like a a real tour. I'd always try to do like a regional show. I mean, I spent a great deal of time in the Detroit area. So we made it out to Chicago a couple times and some of the Michigan satellite cities like Lansing and Kalamazoo, or made it down to Cleveland like once or twice, but it was like very few and far between, you know?
Right.
And it wasn't a tour day in, day out, night after night, you know? And of course it started, we're in Hollywood, this band, actually moved out to Hollywood to join them. You know, I auditioned and got it and relocated my life from Detroit, Michigan, because I felt I had taken it as far as it could go. And I just wanted to do it. And I got the gig, you know, and I'd always wanted to be in a real band. So I moved out and got to do my first real tour. And so we're in Hollywood and the tour starts in, how do you pronounce it? Worcester, Massachusetts. Worcester. Say it again.
Worcester.
Yes, I can't get the Boston accent. Worcester,
you would it to everybody not from New England. You want to say it's Worcester, but it's Worcester.
Kind of like Worcester. There is like a Worcester, Ohio, Worcester, Ohio. So this is like like a worst, like a bratwurst, like Worcester. You know, So the real famous like theater. It was
the Palladium.
Yes. Yeah. The Palladium. Yeah,
I love the Palladium. I've not been to a show there in years, but I grew up like high school, college. Like I went to so many metal shows there.
I love
that theater.
And it was great, you know, and that was with Korpiklaani, Tyr. So Korpiklaani is from Finland. Tyr is from the Faroe Islands. And then Swashbuckle, who was, are they from are they from New Jersey? I think they're from Jersey. And then us, White Wizard. So I got to do my first national tour, man. That was nice. What a fantastic that was fucking awesome. So after that I was in Gypsy Hawk, and that band was on Metal Blade Records. Mm-hmm. And we put out an album called Revelry and Resilience, and we did some great tours. We toured two back-to-back tours with The Sword.
Nice.
And you know, that's where, when we played San Francisco, that's when some of the Metallica guys came out and saw that show.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I'd have to literally look up the name of it. It's a nice theater, but I couldn't tell you the name of the theater offhand, you know?
If it's not in Worcester, I don't know it.
Exactly. I mean, but it was legit, man. And the show was sold out. There's a lot of sold out shows on that tour. Great tour. Us, The Sword, and American Sharks. So awesome. After the show, Lars was just hanging out in the backstage room, which isn't much bigger than my apartment, which is like 350 square feet. And it was like us and the American Sharks guys and The Sword, and everyone's just drinking beers, and there's some joints being passed around. And I got a chance to talk to him, and I said, hey, man, you know, big fan. I mean, the most generic thing you could possibly say.
Yeah.
And so we got to talk, and you know, hey, I play guitar for Gypsy Hawk, and he goes, oh yeah, you were played Brian's, he called it like Brian's party or Brian's gig, because 2 weeks earlier we had played the Metal Blade 30th anniversary with Armored Saint and Sacred Rite.
Yeah.
And Metallica was at that. But I didn't get a chance to meet him or anything. It was kind of like there was a VIP section that I could not get into, right? he knew who the fuck we were. And I thought that was awesome. Rad as hell, you know? So, yeah, that was a great show, man. That was cool. That was the one time I got to meet anybody from that band, Metallica, yeah.
That's awesome. Super nice guy, too, right? I've only met him at, quick little meet and greet things, but super nice, friendly guy. You know, he gets a bad rap, but I'm always like, but he makes you feel like you've known each other your whole life, from my experience. Like, he's like, oh yeah, what's your name?
The vibe was super cool. It was really chill. And this is what really sucked about it. I mean, basically got cock blocked in the sense that the guy that was in charge of Gypsy Hawk's like, oh dude, we got to get out of here, man. We got to leave and go to the house we're staying at overnight. I'm like, we're fucking partying here. I'm having a good time. Oh no, man, we gotta leave right now. I'm like, what the? Oh man, I'm like, I can't go take outside. I mean, man, it was cool. Everyone's just hanging out, and yeah, the vibe was really sweet. But that was my 30-second conversation with Lars.
That's awesome. And I'm interested to talk about your time on Metal Blade Records. Brian was on the show. You busted my balls about how I pronounced his name. Listen, this is a high. It's Slagel, but I said what, Slagel?
Yes, yeah, Slagel. Like Brian Slagel. I was like,
I have Eric. I have a highbrow audience, and I need to cater to them. All right,
so trust.
Yeah. but I'm interested, as somebody who worked in knew Brian on a certain level. He was a guest in the show, obviously played a big role in the early days of Metallica. So what was that experience like? Metal Blade's a legendary label.
It is a legendary label. So when we I had joined Gypsy Honk in 2011, and we did a DIY tour. I love those as well. And when we came back from that particular tour, we played a party with Holy Grail and some other like pretty high profile bands in the underground here. And the show was at a rehearsal studio. They were having like a party thing. And Mike Faley, who also works at Metal Blade, was at the concert. And that band had a underground buzz. And the next day they offered us a record deal. Oh, wow. So that was out of nowhere. And it really was like a kind of an optional show. It was like, hey, do you want to play this show when you get back from the tour? It's like a day after you guys get back from your like cross country DIY tour. So sure. Yeah, let's do it. It's a great lineup. It just sounds fantastic. So we did it and then got a record deal out of it. And, wow.
Proof why you never say no, right?
Right. Yeah. Always say yes.
Yeah.
Right. Of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, right? Yes. Yes. Everything. But you always got to rock and roll, man. Always.
Yeah.
So there you go, kids. Always say yes. Say yes to the rock. And yeah, we got our record deal. So, fast forward, I'm just trying to think. I mean, the album was not written, actually. They signed us based on the performance of that show, which it was actually a really short set. That was a cool party, though. I remember Scott Carlson from Repulsion was there, and just like a lot of metal people were there here in Los Angeles. And anywho, my interactions with Brian were few and far between, meaning like we had a couple short meetings at Metal Blade Records up in where were they at? Thousand Oaks. They're up like about a good almost hour north of here, just for business things. He came out to our vinyl release party, and him and John Bush, I remember they were there at a small record store. We did like a live show at this, like, I think it was called Vacation Vinyl on Sunset Strip. And they filmed that. And, I was a guitar player guy. I wasn't like the mouthpiece of that band.
Yeah.
He was always really cool. I know that he really liked the band I was in, Gypsy Honk. It was kind of a pet project of him because he really has an affinity for Thin Lizzy. Yeah. And I think he believed a lot in the band and was really like pushing for us and put the record out. And we got like, what, three videos? We did Hedge King, Silver Queen, and State Lines. And yeah, my short experience with Metal Blade was great, and he was cool, man. But we dealt with a girl named Kelly a lot. I mean, there's a lot of bands on Metal Blade, and it's not like you're talking to dude every day on the phone.
Sure, of course,
like
yeah.
So, and I'd see, I go out to shows here when the House of Blues was still around, and like I'd see him, like I went to see my buddies in Tear play, and then Metal Blade had signed Tear, and I still see Mike Faley at shows when those were happening, and here and there. So I don't know, Brian's cool, man. I he said hi. That's about it. I was on his label for a hot minute. And it was cool that I remember one of my first high school bands, we did our first recording and sent it out to Metal Blade Records. I think it was a 3-song cassette. And
yeah,
I haven't found this letter, but I'm pretty sure it's around a rejection letter from around 1993 from Metal Blade. Thank you for your submission. I was not quite what we're looking for at this moment.
Yeah.
So how many years later? 17 years
That's
later?
Awesome.
15 years later?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's awesome. And better the rejection letter is better than being ignored, right? So
yeah, very much so. And I hope I find that letter because I think it was perhaps even typed and on like a stationery, if you remember.
Awesome.
But yeah, I mean, it's a cool metal world. I've been in Void Vader here for 5, going on 6 years. God, time flies, man. And it's the best band I've been in on so many multiple levels. And just to give you an example of the small metal world out here, Bill Metoyer, who you should probably interview at some point, but he is a big part of the Metal Blade history. And he produced and engineered our album Stranded on Void Vader. So
nice.
He's up here in North Hollywood. And so we worked with him. So just like more, just kind of close history of, you know, people are still around and people are from that were working heavy metal back in the heyday, the glory days, the very first days before there is even a scene are still around and doing things. And you just rub elbows naturally, you know, like we naturally run into each other at some heavy metal shows at a club called Skinny's that used to be up in North Hollywood and end up working with dude, you know, it all just comes full circle. It's a small world.
Yeah, it is a small world. Even from my, you know, little experience doing this podcast, you know, so many people are like, oh, have you talked to so-and-so? You need to talk to so-and-so. I'll get you in touch with so-and-so. And then next thing you know, it's like, oh, we're recording next week. Yeah, thank you. Then, you know, you just kind of get passed around because everybody knows each other. And everybody knows each other. It's like, oh, this would be a great person to talk to. Oh, this person loves Metallica. Oh, this person knew Metallica in 83. This person, you know, and then it's just like, oh, before you know it, I have like 10 interviews lined up. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome. I noticed that when I was like going back through your catalog and all these players, and I keep seeing their names pop up on all these different podcasts or books I read.
Yeah.
And it's cool to have all the stories come together. Yeah, when you can just like work with each other like that naturally.
It's definitely
sweet, dude. So yeah, those were two of the, you know, like in my previous history, if you will, some bands that made a bit of a mark, you know, like White Wizard was on Earache, and then Gypsy Hawk was on Metal Blade, and Void Vader. We've been, you know, once Gypsy Hawk went down, it was just time to start over again, man. Mm-hmm. It's like you just gotta just pick yourself up by the bootstraps and figure out what your next step is. And mine's always just to get back in as many projects as possible and to see what leads where. And so, yeah, I was dating a girl at the time whose brother heard that, you know, I play guitar and said, hey, why don't you come out and jam, which doesn't sound that positive or I wasn't very hopeful. Like, just random jams are normally pretty lame, actually.
Yeah.
So now it's like, you know, you owe it to yourself to get up and see what this is about. Give it a shot, you know.
Right.
Otherwise, you're just gonna be sitting at home watching like a rerun of Family Guy or South Park. And so I went up there, and the jam went really well. This jam was up in North Hollywood, and that's where I met Lucas. Nice. And so the band has gone through, ended up going through a number of member changes, and so that dude's no longer in it. But I mean, it was very random. You know, I was dating a girl, you know, for a little bit, and then her brother asked me to come jam, and then I ended up meeting Lucas and saying, you know, this is fun. This is cool. I like, if anything else, I'm having fun doing this, like, and just to see where it goes. And I was in a number of projects, and some of them fizzled out. And for a while, I was rolling two bands. That's when I was actually, I kind of just wanted to change it up. I found a, like some dude that was looking for musicians, but he was looking for a bass player, like you said.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll play bass. And it was fun. It was new. And then we couldn't find a singer. I was like, I guess I'll sing.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah. I mean, these are like good, and I just like musical challenges, if you will.
Sure. Yeah.
Cool. But anyway, so I was rolling two bands, and then that band took a shit. But both of them were like the two contenders, if you will. Right. And, like hindsight, it's a really good thing because it was getting to the point of having two serious projects. You couldn't really put the correct amount of effort and energy in either one.
Sure.
And so we really started going hard in Void Vader and doing some regional touring, you know, started out, maybe from just like 2 to 3 days in a row to we did like a California tour, like all the way from San Diego and up through, maybe we played Reno was as far as we got, but like a week tour with a band out of St. Louis called Final Drive, which is where we met Joey DiBiase. Yeah. Who ended up playing drums and was from Connecticut, East Coast. Yes.
A hometown Milford, boy.
And ended up playing drums on the new record, scheduled to come out awesome. April 23rd on Ripple Music. Perfect. So, you know, it's cool. I mean, that was maybe 2 years apart, you know?
That's
you meet
awesome.
People, you stay in touch,
yeah.
You see who you vibe with. I mean, you seem like that guy's really good. He's good, you know? I'll get to it. I'll jump to this story. Our drummer at the time, fantastic musician, Hermann, spelled German, but Hermann, both he and Lucas are from Uruguay and moved here in 2013. But he had to leave the country because after 6-7 years of trying to establish legal residency, and his wife was from Sweden, so they're both trying to establish legal residency, did not happen. And they live in London. So we brought it, and that's how Joey got to be recording on the new record. So Herman was in the band at the time. You know, we did our first record with Ulrich Wild, and he lives down the street, but he had come out to some Gypsy Hawk shows and was interested in producing the third Gypsy Hawk album that never happened. But that's how I met him. And he saw us perform at the Whiskey with Holy Grail and Monty Pittman. So I stayed in touch with him, and when Void Vader started playing, he came out and checked out. I was like, dude, let's work together. I mean, this is cool. Yeah. This is good. He started his own label, and it was a great experience where we could record with Ulrich, and then he put the record out on his label, and we split it just 50-50. Great deal for us. So that just really helped get the ball moving, and that's what the Dehumanized album is that's our first Void Vader release, called Dehumanized, on Worm Group. Ulrich Wild, I mean, you look up his resume, he worked on Pantera, Great Southern Trendkill, he did like Deftones and like a lot of the really really big 90s bands, actually 90s and early 2000s bands, Static X, System of a Down, a lot of those projects. And so a incredibly talented producer, and that helped us get it rolling.
Nice.
And so we'd started touring around the West Coast, and then I just know from experience, if you want to do this and make or just get some attention or be legit, if you will, if you're an original band, you have to tour, you have to play,
right?
You have to get out there, and you know, it's not easy, it's DIY.
Especially right now with everything going on, you know,
no, that's a whole different set of things, isn't
harder.
It
yeah,
well, we're still playing, believe it or not. Now, you can't play in California, but like this weekend, actually I got rehearsal tonight at 9 p.m. We're playing Phoenix. We're playing two shows in Phoenix, East Side, West Side. and we'll play. I mean, it wasn't easy before COVID and the shutdowns. Mm-hmm. We actually were 5 days into our last tour, which started, it was called the Spring Breakneck Tour. Mm-hmm. We were 5 shows in, and we were outrunning the epidemic on the West Coast as it traveled, and cities were getting shut down one by one. You know, it started like, I'm thinking Vegas, Tucson, El Paso, and I think we made it to, and there's like San Angelo, doing my best. And then our last show was in San Antonio. Mm-hmm. The East Coast and the West Coast had basically caught up, and then everything cut down. And it was just like, forget it. The whole USA is locked down. And Joey flew home to Connecticut, and then we just turned around and just drove straight home from San Antonio. Yeah. Right on St. Patrick's Day. We were supposed to play New Orleans on St. Patrick's Day.
Oh,
we
that would have been wild. Yeah.
Yeah. So, so even before that, you know, getting a gig is like, dude, clubs are closing up and drying up. I mean, things are shrinking.
Yeah.
And that's just life, man. It's a different age. That being said, it's still there. Yeah, you just gotta find it, man. There's a lot more desert, and you gotta find the oasis.
That's right.
And yeah, so it's not easy at all for sure. Yeah. But that's how we started to make a mark. You know, like we started touring around and getting larger and larger DIY shows. One of the tours we booked was like probably a full month, and it was. Basically, well, I made it to the East Coast and back. Still not the whole United States, meaning I didn't play like, well, I don't think I've ever played Wyoming in all these days. But anywho, yeah.
The day will come.
That'd be cool, man. I swear Wyoming is just one rest stop in the whole fucking state. You know, I've been to the same one, and it's always cold and really windy. I think it's always, I feel like it's always those drives between Salt Lake City and Denver.
Yeah, so, anyway. Yeah. In Void Vader, I know that you, you know, when we were talking, you sent me some of the music. I liked what I heard, and you can hear, you know, you cite Metallica as a big influence. So in what ways has Metallica influenced you as a guitar player and the music of Void Vader?
Yeah. Well, definitely in the beginning, their tone was some of the best, especially like Master of Puppets and Ride the Lightning would be my favorites, you know? So the guitar tone itself was just ear, just electric. And just a lot of the riffs. I mean, growing up, I had all the tab books. I mean, I think I learned every single song there was. And I still teach them to this day. So, I mean, I'm very familiar with it and their stuff. So it's definitely in the DNA. There's no question. I mean, I've seen them live quite a few times. I mean, they're just awesome. So, so yeah, it's a big part of, it's a big cornerstone of metal. You know, I'm a huge Megadeth fan, Slayer fan, you know? So growing up, those bands had a lot to do with just, my introduction to music and things like that, you know? So, I mean, I think that's, gosh, you know, Metallica doesn't have that many harmony parts. They're actually much more of a rhythm guitar player. That one dude does rhythm and one guy does lead, mostly. Mm-hmm. Well, I know there's exceptions, of course. But so, you know, there's a lot of bands. Void Vader is more of like two lead players and two rhythm players, you know? So, but just, God, man. I was a big fan, dude. I was a big fan. I learned a lot of their tunes, so... Growing up, you know, I had guitars with EMG pickups. I had a Jackson at one point. That's completely because of Metallica. Yeah. And your pursuit of tone and kind of they set the bar.
Are there any – what are the riffs that really stood out to you as a guitar player?
Oh, I mean, both, like I said, Master of Puppets. To me, Master of Puppets and Ride the Lightning were just front to back fantastic. I like the more high energy stuff, you know. I mean, of course, Blackened was very cool, and fucking Dire's Eve is awesome too. Also, like Shortest Straw. I'm just thinking because, you know, I had bought that vinyl and listened to it so many times. It took me a little bit. I guess I started off with the rhythms because I couldn't figure out the leads and they were too fast for me. You know, I had to start on to really learn how to play lead. You kind of got to go back to more basic, like Johnny B. Goode and go through classic rock and work your chops up and stuff like that.
Right.
So very, very much so on the rhythm, especially the riffing. I mean, Trapped Under Ice, just the blazing right hand and Fight Fire with Fire. Also loved the beautiful acoustic intro.
Yeah.
Fight Fire with Fire is killer, man. Especially the solos on like the first three records, especially, you know, the solos were just so lyrical. I really like that approach, you know, where I mean, there's much faster players, as I'm sure you're aware. Mm-hmm. But just a great, great blend of chops and melody, which mm-hmm. I think is also other guys would be like Randy Rhodes and Slash. Marty Friedman would be the higher end. I mean, he's really fast. But what I'm getting at is where it's a solo isn't too basic and boring, or mm-hmm. it's melodically catchy and it has some good chops to it, but it's like it's that right blend of it. I'm looking like Scorpion, yeah. Fantastic soloing, and right. Early Leopard, and a lot of those guys had it, but you know,
yeah,
I mean, you know, Metallica was kind of the one of the it bands of just you know, that time period. I mean, you'd open up a locker and have, you know, if you were a metalhead and someone would have a Metallica pull out poster up there. A lot of cool ones. I mean, and that's how you heard about Mesa, you know, Boogie Amps and EMGs and Jacksons and Jim Dunlop picks, and you know, they did a lot for it. You know, whether or not sure. you know, that's, you know, I got a Marshall amp. I play Marshall and et cetera. But my whole point is, like, you really kind of studied. Those were one of the guys that are at the forefront that a lot of people just really studied. Like I said, set the bar, if you yeah. will, and then like. Yeah, their videos were cool. One was a big deal when it came out, but also like Cliff Mall, there was like an aesthetic about them. They had a bit of a reputation. I mean, it's just a way that they were looked at. Like they kind of presented the heavy metal culture at the time.
Right. You
know?
Yeah.
So it was really cool to be there then.
Yeah, yeah. There's, I think, you know, like you said, there are bands that play faster. There are bands that play better, right? There are better, more technical musicians mm-hmm. out there, but mm-hmm. they just sort of have this combination that works, and they write great songs, and there's a melodicness to it and a catchiness to it that just appeals to a mass amount of people, both metalheads and non.
Yeah, man. I mean, they're definitely a religion in themselves. And they've gone through quite a few phases as yeah. well. So it's interesting to watch the reality show that is Metallica, right? And the different chapters of all these,
yes.
all these years, and what are yeah. they doing now? And they're still doing it to this day as well.
Have you followed them through these different chapters? Do they lose you along the way? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the last time I saw Metallica was I was teaching a Guitar Center studio, and one of my students was part of the Metallica fan club and got tickets to a show that they played here at an airplane hangar. And it was Call of Duty 4 was coming out, and Metallica played their launch. I got cool. to see them. So yeah. that would have been around 2010 or 11, 10 maybe. Yeah, so that's the last time I saw him live. I know Sam just went up to – Sam's our bass player in Floyd Fader, and he just went up yeah. to San Francisco and saw one of their live, like, the Symphony 2 shows.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he said that was cool. So I've been following them, like, my whole life. I mean, you really – they always pop into it, man. Kind of like your podcast just came up, you know?
There's a lot of Metallica podcasts out there, too. You know, there's a lot of us trying to spread the gospel, I guess.
Sure. Yeah.
So you mentioned before that you have been to, you know, several concerts, including that last one. Do you have a favorite personal concert that you've seen of them? You know, favorite?
Yeah, it was the first one in 19, you know, yeah. Justice for All with a cult opening in 1989, yeah. you know.
I had a feeling that was your answer, but figured I'd ask the question. Do you have a second favorite that comes to mind?
Well, the Call of Duty show was pretty sweet because it was a very, I mean, for Metallica, very intimate situation. The sound was great, too.
Yeah.
The sound was really good. Because once again, the crowd was one third armed forces, one third fan club, and one third Activision people. It was sweet. I think there was an open bar there too. That was great.
Was that a full set that they played? Like a
yeah.
full?
Yeah, they didn't just come out and do four songs. This is a straight rock show, man. It was killer. That's awesome. It was killer. I saw them on like the Load tour. I lived in Atlanta from like 1995 to 1998, so I saw them on that tour. where the stage like collapsed, you know, and they had that thing happening. I almost saw, remember when Garage Days came out in, what was that, 2000 or something?
It was 98, like the tail end there, the 90s, yeah.
So they did some select shows and they played the State Theater in Detroit. That's what it was called at the time anyway.
Yeah.
But we were partying really hard. We pre-partied. I don't know. I ended up getting in an
office. I'm noticing a trend here.
it's part of my...
Oh, of course.
Rock and roll, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would have been fantastic, but like some asshole started something with me. I was standing right next to me. I don't even know what his problem was. Detroit people can be very volatile for no reason. I got thrown out of that show right when it started, right when the intro. It wasn't my fault, I swear.
I believe you, Eric. Fuck that other guy.
Fuck that guy, man. Yeah, you couldn't get shows, tickets. One of my friends won tickets to that show. You couldn't buy them.
Yeah.
But that would have been fucking sweet. I saw him on the Black Album. God. 4 or 5 times. I mean, they toured so much and they.
Yeah, that was like a 3-year tour.
Yeah, man. And then, you know, I remember watching the VHS of Year and a Half of Life of Metallica 1,000 times. And I saw him not 1,000 times, but probably 5 times on that tour from Detroit. And Kalamazoo back and forth. And we were seeing a lot of shows back then, but there's a lot of great concerts back then. Yeah. Saw them with Guns N' Roses and Faith No More.
It's what I know.
92, the big, the big super headliner show. They played Joe Louis. They played the Silver Dome.
And everything went smoothly at that one with Axl and company. Yeah.
There was no they played their set.
Yeah.
It was what a great show, man. I mean, Silverdome sounds not ideal, but that
lineup. I mean, I love all three of those bands, so.
Yeah, man. That's what I'm saying is like at the time I almost didn't go to that show. I mean, we were so spoiled. There were so many great concerts constantly coming that didn't seem to be a big deal, and I think we ended up buying tickets the day of, you know.
Yeah,
and going and getting pretty decent seats, all things considered, man. And that was a true kind of old school heavy metal experience with the chicks all popping their tops in between bands. And then at least in Detroit, I'm sure they did it. Like they really don't do this anymore. It was they'd actually put them on the big screen, you know, and everyone go, yay! And we were pretty young. We're still in high school. That was a big deal. I was like very. I don't know, I was like seeing your first pair of tits on a radar movie, you know?
I remember I saw, so I have an interesting GNR story because I saw them, I saw GNR 2.0 for Chinese Democracy.
Yeah.
But it was like the first go around. I don't think the album was actually out yet, but they were, it was like right after, I'm not sure if you recall, like Axl Rose made a surprise appearance at like the VMAs on MTV. Yes. And then he kind of launched a tour. I think, so it was right after that. I'm like, I don't know what to expect. Like he sounded shitty on the VMAs. I don't know what to expect for the show.
Well, everyone was nagging on him. I don't know if he even really did bad, you know, it's just, they're just being dicks to him. But
and then,
I can't remember. Was that like 98 or something? Or
it must have been.
Was it after the 2000s?
I don't remember. It wasn't too far into the 2000s if it was. I think it was the 2000s, but I don't think it was too far into the. But my mom always loved Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, awesome.
So I went with my mom, and we had a little family, you know, concert outing. The problem was, Axl was being Axl, and GNR was super late. So they had an opening act, and then an hour of nothing. The second opening act. Then an hour of nothing. And then at 11 o'clock when GNR was supposed to be ending, they hit the stage. But from the hour from 10 to 11, the whole thing was just showing boobs on the big screen.
The
and I'm just like, I'm standing next to my mom and I'm like, oh, I don't know if they'll hit the stage. Maybe we should go.
a little awkward to be with your mom in that experience, but
my mom's like, why are they doing this?
That's how it was, man. It was kind of piratey back then. It was rad.
Yeah.
I kind of missed that. I mean, that was just like, That was part of the kind of chaotic culture.
Yeah.
I do think that Guns N' Roses did take a while after Metallica. I mean, it was probably at least an hour till they took the stage, which, you know, as you know, in a normal big old arena show, it's not how it goes, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I saw the 2.0 as well. I saw them on a New Year's Eve show talking about Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
Hard Rock they played.
They sounded great, though. He came out and he put on a good show that night.
I love Guns N' Roses. I think they're awesome, man.
I saw them on their current reunion too, with Slash.
Slash and Duff.
And they were phenomenal. They were on time. They played for like 2.5 hours, and they sounded fantastic.
It's a long span, Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they got caught so much hell for it. Yeah. I guess. I
gotta think like Slash and Duff has to have like in their contracts like. Axel owes him like, you know, $500 million or something ridiculous if he's late, because he's on time every single night now.
Yeah, you know, maybe he just got sick of it too.
Yeah,
you know? like why would you really be that late all the time? Right. Just well, like blown out on, you know, recovering from hangover slash whatever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You're doing. Got to get it together. But right. Yeah. I haven't seen them for a while. Probably it was 2013, I think, when that show was. I mean, that's forever ago. Time is just flying, dude.
I know. Are there any newer metal rock bands that you are super into or that you've played shows with that you would recommend to listeners of this podcast?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, the band that I listen to a lot right now is called, like, just changed their name. They're called Unto Others, and they're from Portland.
Okay.
And they have like an EP, actually two EPs and a full album out. The album's called Mana. And that band is so cool. They're like, they actually have a bit of a gothic new wave approach in the voice, which is rare and different. And he pulls it off, and they got like metal riffs. When in my previous bands, we used to do shows with this band called Spellcaster, actually maybe just once, but they're around, and that's the band that he came from. So they used to be called, Idle Hands, and I guess they had to change their name. So anyway, long story short, check out this band called Unto Others. Okay. And they got some videos out, and they're on the whole Spotify and everything. That's a killer band. There's a great band called Haunt. They're from Fresno. We've done some shows with them. They do like more of a traditional metal thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've heard them before. They've kind of more of like an old school kind of Sabbath-y thing going, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, he did. Like, he was in a band actually, when I was in Iron Knot, that band I used to sing and play bass for, we actually opened like for, I guess, one of their first shows out of Fresno. That was called Beastmaker, and they made a huge buzz, and they were on Rise Above Records, which is a subsidiary of Metal Blade, and I kind of like got them a big following, and that's where Haunt comes from. And like my buddy's band, I'm wearing a t-shirt right now, Madrost. That's some fucking killer fucking just, well, death metal, really, man. I mean, it's not just metal, it's more death metal. So those are a couple bands to check out. Cool. My friends in Mothership, we're also on Ripple Music, who is a label that Void Vader's on, and Void Vader. Check us out.
Of course. Well, if you don't mind, I would love to include a Void Vader song in this episode.
Oh, please do. I'm excited.
Awesome. So I know I'll end with this Metallica question. I know that you, I'm going to ask you, I lied. I'm going to ask you two tough Metallica questions to end this show.
All right.
As a guitarist, you have to choose one to be in your band. Do you choose James or Kirk?
James.
He's got the riffs. He's got the down picking, right?
Great voice.
Rhythm master. Great voice. Yeah. But you don't get the voice, you just get the guitar.
Okay. Yeah, still I think James.
Now, I know you have you've already mentioned your love for Ride, Master.
Yeah.
Justice.
Yeah.
You can only have one Metallica album for the rest of your life. Which one is it?
Master of Puppets.
Yeah, I mean, I got to agree. It's not I always tell people, if you played the song Master of Puppets, that sums up everything in 8 minutes that Metallica does really well. It's like the perfect Metallica song, I think, on the perfect album from start to finish, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's great on that particular album. The songs, I think Battery is my favorite.
I mean, Battery's a I think Battery's got to be their best opener. I think Battery's got to be their best opener.
Beautiful, yeah, man.
Orion's their best instrumental. I mean, it's just so.
Ooh, I don't know. Orion versus Call of Cthulhu. It's very close. Oh, and I like To Live Is to Die as well.
I like them all. I'm gonna make a. I'm gonna do a hot take here. I would actually choose the live orchestra version from S&M of Call of Cthulhu over the original album version.
Controversial. I love it.
I'm gonna go with that controversial statement for this episode. Cool. I love To Live Is to Die though. But Orion for me, once I accepted my role as the bass player and you go
as lead bass,
you know, and then you have the so. I mean, I just think, of course, you have Anesthesia Pulling Teeth, and you have so many great parts, but that's just a great shining moment for Cliff Burton. So
it's beautiful. I mean, when I was younger, I didn't know that was a bass solo in Orion.
Yeah.
You know, I knew it was, I think maybe someone told me or whatever, but I was aware of it for Anesthesia, but I didn't realize that was a bass solo right there, you know?
Yeah. If you don't know, you wouldn't tell unless you're, you know, it was at a young age.
Well, I also think that's peak Cliff Burton.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's who him at his most musical.
I would agree with that. Eric, this was a blast. Thank you so much for coming on Metallicast. Where can everybody find you, or perhaps most importantly, find Void Vader?
Find Void Vader. VOIDVATOR. Just type that into your internet machine and reach out to us. A lot of things. We're on the Spotify. We're on the YouTubes. We're on BitChute. We're on the Facebook. We're on all the platforms. So that's how you do it.
And I will definitely include links in the episode description. So please check out Void Vader. And like I said, I will include a song of this episode as well. Eric, this was fantastic. Thanks so much for coming on Metallicast.
Thank you, Brandon. Yeah.
A huge thank you to Eric Kluber for coming on Metallicast. Eric and I have been talking by email since he came on the show, and he had a couple more stories to add on. First and foremost, in reference to seeing Metallica and Guns N' Roses, he writes, "There was one Axl moment. He got mad that the band wasn't playing You Could Be Mine right, so he threw his mic down and walked off the stage. Then they did a 20-minute drum solo and then a 20-minute guitar solo. Then he came back on stage and said, 'We're going to do this right,' and they did You Could Be Mine again and play the rest of the concert. That happens pretty close to the beginning of the show too, a few songs in. I had a feeling that there was an Axl Rose moment. I feel like every show during this era had at least one." He also adds, in reference to being influenced by Metallica and picking up some of their gear that they had played, in particular guitars, he writes, "I did buy a Jackson in the early 90s. I know Metallica has been an ESP band for decades. Hell, I'm playing my ESP Eclipse in this photo, which you can see attached to this episode on social media at Metallicast Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram." He adds, "But Kirk used to play a Black Jackson Randy Rhoads Flying V for years during the Master Puppets and Justice years. During the Justice era, he was playing a few non-ESP guitars prominently very often. Anyway, I felt that I need to clarify the statement about picking up a Jackson due to Metallica influence in case someone says, 'What an idiot. Doesn't he know that Metallica primarily uses ESP?' Come to think of it, I've also owned a Gibson Flying V from the Kill 'Em All era and a Fender Strat from the Ride the Lightning era and a Black ESP Strat with a Whammy when I lived in Atlanta. I even picked up a Mesa Boogie Mark IV head and cabinet from the Master Puppets era for an amazing deal then. I've had all the main Kirk axes at one point." So just a little bit of clarification, a little bit of an add-on for all of you from Mr. Eric Kluber. Please follow the links in the episode description to check out Void Vader. You can follow them on social media and check out some of their music on Bandcamp or YouTube. And also please follow Metallicast on social media at Metallicast Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, like I already said. If you'd be so kind to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, that goes a long way in helping the show grow and helping me get more great guests like Eric Kluber. And if you're brand new to listening, please subscribe and download as well. As I said, I'm ending this episode with a song from Void Vader. This is the first single from their upcoming album, Great Fear Rising, which will be released April 23rd on Ripple Music. The name of the song is I Can't Take It. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, mill up your ass. Yeah.
Not experts.